All right, guys, welcome to the AMX Superstores Pro MX Review Show from round number 3 here at Gilman, South Australia. Myself and Danny Ham are bringing you this one Sunday night, so it's going to be in the feed first thing Monday morning for you guys, as promised. Kind of got a bit mixed up there with Horsham, but we're back on that schedule now. Hammy and I are staying late. We're going home Monday, so we thought, hey, let's get this one done. Before we get started, lots of great racing to cover, but we have to give a massive shout out and a thank you to the continued support of AMX Superstores, who continually bring you the Primex coverage on the Inside Dirt Network via this podcast. So AMX Superstores are the nation's leading motorcycle retail specialists with over 30 locations nationwide from WA to SA. We were hanging out with the Blair Ethol crew this weekend, the store in Adelaide with Bex and the team. We had dinner with them last night, rad crew, rad shop, and as always, you go to Primex and the local AMX Superstores team are hanging out at the round, kicking it with the fans, doing the retail, and having a good time. So that's what AMX Superstore is all about. And whether you're looking for bike, you know, accessories, consumables, road, off-road, motocross, enduro, everything in between adventure riding, AMX Superstores has you covered, from apparel to boots, tires, consumables, oils, you name it. And if you can't get into a store, which with over 30 plus locations is highly unlikely, but if you can't, make sure you go to amxsuperstores.com.au and they will have you covered with same week delivery on just about everything that will keep your bike and body on the track. So massive shout out to AMX Superstores. This is the Primex recap show from round number 3 at Gilman. Let's get into it.
Okay, kids, you're in for a real treat today.
He's Jimmy's brother, the guy, the singer.
Gator never been about that. Never been about playing no shit.
It'd be like looking over and seeing your ex-missus with someone else. Like, it's a...
There's a few of them going around the pits, I'm sure that's happened before.
Do you know what I've been smashing lately?
Can we say it on the show?
Why weren't you more successful?
Well, you know, because I sucked, so...
All right, guys, as promised, the AMX Superstores Pro MX Review Show coming to you from Danny Ham's hotel room in Adelaide. We did this a couple of years ago, Hammy. I don't know why we didn't do it last year, but it seems to work well at Gilman. So I thought, that's why he up during the week, like, let's bring it back.
Yeah, why not? It's a good opportunity to get to have a bit of a chat about what we saw today. You see a different side of it to what I see. Obviously, we're pretty limited to what we see on the monitors that sit in front of us. You've got the live view. So I think between the two of us, we should be able to pick up on quite a few things that should cover the day pretty good.
Yeah, I think let's set the scene before we start talking about the racing. Obviously, Gilman is an interesting track. I'll be real. Did not have much enthusiasm to come back here this year. That's no reflection on the club or anything or anybody involved. They do a lot of good things. But the weather the last few years has been miserable. It's been freezing. That's why I live on the sunny coast now, because I don't like the cold. And, man, got there yesterday, blue skies. The track was baked, but they had a lot of moisture underneath. It was a different Gilman to what we've seen the last few years.
Yeah, so the club put a lot of effort into getting a lot of sand in it over the last couple of years. It's evident with the way the track is presented to us. But it's still that, what is it? It's like a bit of a clayish sort of sand, isn't it? There's a bit of body to the...
I don't know, what do you call that? A sandstone almost? Like,
yeah.
It's
certainly nice and fluffy, and the guys told us that they've been, over the last 2 weeks, pumping a hell of a lot of water into it. The region itself has been very, very dry. So that's always going to be a risk when you go to a venue like that and it's so dry that you'll get faced with a point in the day where you'll all have to throw a lot more water into it, or it's just going to get to that really hard pack, really dry situation. And I think they did a fantastic job with getting as much water into it as they did, and the track prep that we were presented with is pretty good too. So I think overall the track was pretty cool. But as far as the weather, you're right, the last few years it's been pretty horrible, and this year it was absolutely stunning weather. I mean, we walked out in the morning without jackets on, and I don't know the last time we've come here to do that.
No, I ran a beanie this morning just out of fear of like it being cold, but it warmed up by 8 a.m. It was very interesting. I think you look at the track prep. We haven't seen, I think especially what happened last year with the tracks being ripped and watered and then the mud races that we had because it was either wet coming in, it was ripped coming in, and then it rained. The track's definitely gone away from that of late. A lot of the tracks are a lot drier, a lot skatier. I think it makes for better racing when the tracks are that way. I think we saw the balance of that today, maybe the other end of the spectrum, where as soon as practice went out, I was like, oh, wow, this track is wet in the middle. So then insides, far outsides are what happens. And you end up with this kind of no man's land in the middle of the turns, in the middle of the straights, where you can move around. But if you move off the main line, it's heavier and it slows you down.
Yeah, I saw, it was unfortunate, right through the middle. I saw the 85s go off for their practice. And
yeah,
I don't know if you saw it, but a poor little kid on the second straight just went simply over the bars down the straight just because he hit a bog patch. So it goes to show just how much water there was around. But I think, like you said, it did open up a track that it offered a lot of different lines. Whether there was lines out there that were better than others, I think we got to talk to some of the riders in between races, and you know, a lot of them said it's kind of one line. It was not really one lined. There's a lot of lines on offer, but it's maybe there was only one line that was kind of working. However, you watch late in the day when people started, you know, investigating around looking for some different stuff, then all of a sudden there's these new lines that were actually working. So I think the track itself turned into something that was pretty good. You just had to go looking for it to find out where those lines were.
I think the only thing to add to that is if you look at the track at Gilman, obviously it's very low-lying ground, and that place actually floods. Like we saw when we got out of here last year, the rain hit in the final moto and then it kept raining as we left. And then the next day, the whole track was submerged. So to battle that, what they do is they build it up 2 or 3 feet out of the ground. And it's a real contrast because then you see the infield is this hard-packed, baked, like you said, hard pack clay, right? But then you've got the sand track that sits 3 foot on top of the ground. But we kind of talked about this at dinner. The way the Australian tracks, in my opinion, tend to form up is that they drop into the ground. I don't know if that's the dirt. I don't know if that's the riding style. I'm not sure why it's different to Europe and different things, but you end up with a lower laying main line. But because the track's also built out of the ground, if you notice the turns where they actually built outside berms, like say after the finish, there was the left-hander, there was that big step-down thing, and then that right, they were going to the inside, 180 right, or they were blowing around the outside in that Thor right-hander. And because there was an outside berm, there was racing. But then any of the turns where they were elevated out of the ground but they didn't build an outside berm, all the outside lines led off the track. It just pushed off. So then those turns, became one line because there was nothing to bank off.
Yeah, and we saw that also on the telecast. I can't remember which turn it was. Maybe it was just before the Yamaha turn, third last turn, where we saw some of the riders trying to turn off that outside line. And like you said, because it is pushed up, they blew through that, and all of a sudden there's nothing at all. It's just a bank down to the ground below it. So there was those options there for sure. A lot of the time we did see a lot of inside lines, but I still think there was plenty of stuff out there. If you went looking for it, you were able to find it.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was a racer's track and a lot of mistakes, a lot of injuries today as well, which was interesting. I don't think we've seen that many medic flags and things for a long time.
I don't know if it was... Look, that's a hard one. The track is tough, no doubt. It's a racer's track. It was rough. It was ruddy. There were square edges, and it really... It brought out the best of the best in the riders, for sure. The medics, the injuries, is that just a level of our races that are coming to this event? And, they've all got to learn somewhere. They've got to pick up that experience. But maybe it's just the level of rider rather than so much the track itself. Yes, it's hard to track. Don't get me wrong. It was a difficult one. And for anyone that hasn't experienced before, they're going to struggle around it. But it's hard to sort of say where the blame would come on that as far as injuries and stuff like that.
Yeah, sometimes roll the dice, right? You just get those rounds where there's more than others. I mean, I think the 85 moto at the start of the day with there being two ambulance riders just sets a weird tone for the day.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's get into it, Hammy. So obviously, you know, we had a chat in the morning on the mic. I wrangled you on the start line, and we both were of the same opinion through no communication, but we basically both came up with, you know, typically whoever leaves Gilman, I think you had the stat, which I didn't, which you can say now, but whoever leaves Gilman with the win typically wins the championship, which was, what was your stat?
Yeah, so over the last 2 years prior, so 2023, 2022, over the three classes, so that's 6 times it can happen. 5 out of the 6 times, whoever won the round in those classes went on to win the championship. It was only the one ride last year, I think it was, where Ferris won the championship, but he didn't have a great round last year.
Yeah.
But every other class, that was, they went on to win.
How it played out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which then you look at what happened in MX1 today and you go, interesting. I actually wasn't aware that Webster's win today got him back the red plate. I thought there was more of a point swing than that.
No, there is. I think there's only two, three points in it. There's nothing in it at the moment. So
yeah, yeah.
Three points. That's it.
That surprised me. And even when I was commentating, I was like, it's okay for Beaton. He's not losing that many points. I didn't realize that it was actually that close.
Yeah. So up the front of the field in the MX1 class, certainly it is very, very close. It's a distance back to anyone else past that point. But up the front there, it was a very important round for both of them. And I think mentally for both of those riders, they're pretty headstrong at the moment, both of them. Both of them tried to shake each other down. I think out of the two riders today, I think Beaton had the upper hand and Webster had a very solid day, but he was kind of handed it a little bit by the mistake from Beaton that gave him the overall win today. Had they not happened, they would have gone away on equal points again.
But we've seen that before now, though. Like, it's an interesting swing for me because typically Webster's the guy we're always going, oh, he's the fastest guy, but if he just doesn't throw it away. And now, correct me if I'm wrong, round one, I'm trying to remember, I think there was a moto that Beaton crashed and Webster got it because of the crash.
Yep, same thing again.
You know, absolutely. And then you go, okay, Beaton conceded to Crawford in moto one at Horsham, played the long game, got the win, and you go, oh, he's going to do that again this weekend. He concedes to Webster in Moto 1, which surprised me a little bit. Like, he had the sprint speed, he had it there, but he just couldn't or chose not to take the risk, whatever you want to call it. But then in Moto 2, he has the sprint speed and the mistake costs him the win. It's just interesting for Webster not to be that guy.
Yeah, you expect Webster to be the fast one out of the two, considering the track conditions. But if you look at it, I think, going over the three rounds, that it seems that Beaton is more the rounded rider. He can ride any conditions and, you know, he's going to be pretty consistent doing it. Going on the fact with what you said with today with Beaton and Webster, we're keeping a pretty close eye on the lap times as well. And every time that in the first race especially, Beaton would close in quite considerably. Especially when it got to that very last point of the race, Webster was able to wick it up. No doubt Beaton had the fastest lap over both races, but Webster was able to answer the call every time it counted. So, you know, that's the mental strength there from Webster. Had that race, maybe that second race, had it gone a couple more laps after Beaton threw it away, maybe it might have been a different story. But I think at that two more laps to go, Webster saw that we were at the end of the race and he did not want to give that up. So
no, he weathered it and he was smart through the back markers. Did he wipe out Bryce Ognenis, the kid on the Husky?
I don't think so. I do remember
I saw him get up and wave his arms, but I didn't see what happened.
I think there was a battle between two of the back markers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think that's how that came about.
On the mic, I was like, oh, Webby's not, you know, he's not letting anything stop him. He just cleaned out a back marker. Like, you know, I'm just getting hyped. But
yeah. Well, it was on the edge of our shot as well. So we didn't see it exactly, but I think it was that Webby was trying to make his way through the back markers at that point, and they were battling each other.
Because I saw Bryce get up and wave his arms, and I was like, oh, okay.
But, yeah, we saw that too.
It was... Yeah, it seemed that Webby just got through the back mark, whether it was luck, track position, it just seemed to work in his favour.
Yeah, and on that track in particular, you can find a back marker at the worst time, right, around that track. If you fall in behind a back marker going through some of those 180 turns, like, it can really play against you or for you. And I think we saw a little bit of that today in the overalls for probably all the classes. When they did get into those back markers, they certainly played a part.
Beaton, no doubt, has the speed. Like, that speed in Moto 2, he's going really fast. And I can't remember the time swings. It's late and we're tired. But the time swings in qualifying, like, there were, I think, Webby broke it down to 0.5 in the end, but I think Beaton's first hot laps were like nearly 3 seconds faster than anybody else's.
Yeah.
Like, and that time stood through qualifying, and then his first lap in Super Bowl, same deal. Like, everyone bridged the gap, but his initial speed on that track was just next level.
Yeah, so there's no doubt that Beaton has got the speed. We've seen that. We saw that at Horsham as well. He was very quick. I think in that last moto, he did a 2 minute flat compared to a 2:02 was the fastest time from anyone else. So when he wants to turn it up, then he's got that speed. But
so my question is, though, why is that not his base speed?
Because that's on the ragged edge. That
you think that's on the edge?
He still looked very in control with what he was doing, but it's a fine line. He is right there on the edge of things potentially going wrong. And I think that he's a smart enough rider to know that if he pushes at that for too long, then that's only increasing the chances of the risk of something going wrong, going down, making a mistake. And I think he's smart enough to realize that if he can't get it just at his normal race base pace there, then maybe it is best to get second on the day, third on the day, and still continue to get those points. We've seen many rider before that who's been extremely fast that looks like they're going to win, throw it away, and then all of a sudden they're completely out of the championship.
Yeah, okay, interesting. I think there's a lot of parity between Webster and Jed right now, and I think Kyle's test is actually going to be Maitland, because he really struggled there in the past on the 450. Like, last year was not good. I remember walking trackside and nearly getting hit by his bike because it went over the big berm at the finish. Like, and he was kind of shaking his head getting up from that. I was obviously standing right there, and he's kind of like, what the hell just happened? So, yeah, I think he's got a lot better on the hard pack. The Honda can be not the greatest bike on the hard pack, depending on how it's set up. And obviously, I've spoke with Ross before. I've mentioned it on the podcast that Webby's not that fussy with bike setup, and that helps him with the Honda. But yeah, I think the next round's going to be a test.
Well, I'll put it to you this way. Going on what you said with last year, Webby didn't have a great round at Maitland. No, but he was fast. He had some very fast lap times. He was putting himself into some good positions. He just threw it away. And if he can sort that out, then he is going to be pretty solid, I think. Even at Horsham, we saw some good speed out of him, but he just had those small moments that took him out of the equation. But going back to, you know, everyone sees Webby as just a soft terrain sand rider. I think he's very much grown out of that now. I think he is a much more rounded rider. But if you were to look at anyone in the field, you'd almost have to say without a doubt that Beaton is the rounded rider, and that's probably why we see him up there at every round so far that we have.
Yeah, I agree. I think Webby's definitely grown out of it. It's just that, I guess, once you get something in your mind about a rider, it's hard, especially like as our industry standing. You just kind of always say that stuff every year. But now it's going to be interesting. I think those two clearly are starting to separate themselves. I think Ferris was fourth overall. We're not going to glance over Todd Waters. I think we come back to Todd. Ferris was probably the only other rider that went with those two as far as speed. In the first moto, he was in the battle with Webster for, 20 minutes, I think. He was in second before Beaton passed him. And then he had the goggle issue and everything in between and pulled back. And pretty much once Beaton got him, he just dropped back 15 seconds within the space of two laps. Like, the chase was gone. But Ferris, I chatted to him yesterday. He said they've been testing. The team flew up to Queensland. You could tell he looked more comfortable. He looked a lot more like the old Ferris of last year. But three rounds in now, and we had this conversation at dinner. It's like, if you haven't made it happen within three, maybe four, you can sort of see now that Webster and Beaton are starting to separate themselves from the rest of the field.
And not just the fact that they're separating. Those two have been Well, the points show they've been relatively consistent. So you can't bank on them having too bad a round. Of course, anything can happen. But if you're banking on them, not that Ferris is trying to bank on them having a round, but it's going to take a bad round now for Ferris to jump back into the fight with either of these two guys. They've had too many consistent races. They've got some great points. This weekend is a massive improvement for Ferris. I've been disappointed, honestly, and I'm sure a lot of people have been disappointed with the performance that Ferris has had, whether that's just a bike setup or the preparation coming into it. Well, I don't know. I haven't spoken to him about it, but going off the form that we saw out of him last year, you really expected to see him be up there contending, you know, maybe not for the win at Wonthaggi or here in Gilman, but definitely be up there. Certainly today at Gilman, a completely different, much more recognizable Ferris that we're used to seeing 100%. But then, like you said, the moment the pass was made, then he was dropped back a long way. Whether there was a goggle problem or what, I don't know. I didn't speak to him about it. The extent of the goggle problem, if there was one. But still, you know, he was there and then he was gone. And I don't think you can afford to let these guys get that kind of mindset in them that you can just, for Dean Ferris, you can just pass Dean Ferris and the race is over for you. He needs to have that fight in him, and I'm sure we will still see it. He's a champion for a reason, a multi-champion. He knows how to race.
I think it will come. I think
it'll come, but at what time?
Yeah, and when is it too late?
Correct.
I think, was it the TV interview? I believe you may remember from the last round. It might have been a TV feature. I can't remember, but I think essentially he said something along the lines of everybody else is really going faster this year, and I don't remember his exact wordings, but it was an awareness that last year he had that sprint speed again, like back when he was doing his back-to-back championships. And now this year, everyone's kind of that beaten Crawford, whoever, Webby, really, they probably have more sprint speed than Dean. It's just flipped a little bit for, I guess, he is the elder statesman, though. I mean, you saw, we'll bench now to Todd Waters, who had a really fantastic round, third overall. Incredible to see Todd back. And I said to Todd, I did some post-race interviews that, ironically, I'm going to go out Sunday night, but we've had a bit of an equipment problem. So they're going to probably be out tomorrow night. So they'll be out after this podcast. But anyway, you'll hear it in the post-race interviews that, you know, I sort of said to Todd, I haven't seen this from you. It was starting to come back last year just when you got hurt at QMP. I felt like he was starting to get that intensity back. And now, you know, I said to him, I felt like you made a choice today. You knew you could either go with the group out front, you could go with Webby and Jed and Dean and get tired and blow out and then have to maintain the last 10 minutes, or you could run your speed for 30 minutes but not be in the battle. And he was like, no, 100%. I just decided today I'm going to be in the battle, and then whatever happens, happens.
And that's a funny mindset, isn't it? Like, yeah, we've spoken about this a bit too. The mindset of knowing where you should be and truly believing where you should be. We know the speed that Todd Waters has. I'm sure he knows the speed that he's had. And speaking with him many times, he's like, yeah, we've just got to do better. But until you decide, like you said, to make that call, today is the day, and make it happen, you're just going to continue to ride around in those places back a little bit
six,
further.
Six, seven, eight. I admit, man, I don't know how you were. When I saw Todd in that opening moto, especially in Moto 2, I was like, he's going for the front. I haven't seen him ride like this since, I don't know when, probably 2019 when he won his championship. Like, he has his Todd Waters style. He's got arms longer than his legs and he kind of sits upright, but he was just charging. He's got his own style of scrubbing, but I haven't seen it. And I just kept saying to him in an interview, I'm like, man, I haven't seen you look like that. And he was really, he was pretty stoked. Like, you could tell.
Yeah, well, he did it in Moto 1 too. He come from behind. He passed some big name riders there. Midway through the race, he might have tightened up a little bit towards the end, but he certainly had a different approach to the day. And I think that was very evident today. And I think if he can continue to do that, then he is, he's going to be up there a lot more often than what we've seen over the last couple of years.
All right. So we talked about Soddy. So that was your overall podium. Webby got the win, beaten second, Todd Waters third. Ferris ended up fourth overall on the day. Gibbsy, fifth overall. Gibbsy's really fast in qualifying. His flat tracking underneath the berms in the sand is incredible. Like, I think he's so underrated with the corner speed he carries. But it didn't quite translate to the results I think he should have had today. Like, it was really solid, fifth overall. I mean, he beat Gibbsy. Sorry, he beat Nato Crawford. He beat Luke Clout. He beat Metcalf. But, I mean, he's having fun. He's aware of where he's at in his career. But at the same time, he's probably better than that as well with how well he rides.
Yeah, we saw some speed out of him at Horsham as well. And I kind of expected a bit more out of him here today. He certainly has got the skill level. He rides so damn fast. It just seems... One, it usually seems that he doesn't get the start and he's got to push himself into a position to make these passes. And by that time he does these passes, then everyone else is gone. Well, today we saw a decent start out of him as well. So I expected him maybe to be able to run up there. But look, not taking away, this track was pretty brutal today with the way the edges are all formed up. There were some pretty gnarly bumps out there. And you do have to have that mindset that if you want to run fast and run with these guys, you need to take some risks. And I'm sure at this level where these guys, like Waters, like, I mean, even Ferris to some extent, if he's starting to think this way, like Gibbs that have been around a long time, Metcalf, you know, they don't want to take the risks that they used to take. It's a different mindset when you get a bit older, where the young guys can still push it through and not be too phased about it. It's a natural progression of a career, isn't it? It's just the way the riders end up being.
Well, yeah, you get to a point. Ferris got two, you know, beautiful kids. I think Gibbsy has one on the way, if I'm not mistaken. You know, Meddy's got his kids, right? Like, 30s, you know, I'm mid-late 30s, got two kids. The risk-reward of anything is measured, and that's a job for them. It's no different.
Yeah, they don't... I mean, they don't sit there and
it's not
and
a just, conscious decision.
No, that's no. Right. It's not a conscious decision, but somewhere in the back of their mind, you just start thinking differently. And if you're not willing to take those risks, then things start becoming a lot harder for you at that point in your racing career. And I think maybe we see that a little bit, you know, like we mentioned with Beaton at the start of this one. Why is he looking so fast? It's because he's pushing that limit. They're right on the edge of that limit.
And I have heard that with just jumping back to what you said. I hear different things about the training because obviously Webby trains with Beaton. They're part of the same crew with Ross's program. I don't think they always train on the same days is what I hear. And I hear, this is just, you know, what you hear in the pits, it's awesome, it's racing, that the days that Webby and, you know, and I'm probably going to get a text or something saying, you got no idea what you're talking about, but that's cool. If I don't, I don't. That the days they train together, they're match speed. And then I hear that the days that Webby's not there, Jed has extra time that he keeps up his sleeve, right? So maybe just pit talk, but that's what I hear. So yeah. It's interesting. Now, Nato Crawford, 6th overall. Crawford's second moto, mechanical issue. He, on the last lap, I believe, right?
Correct, yeah. So we didn't see it.
I didn't see it either.
We did not see it anywhere on our TV. He was there, and when they crossed the line, we were confused. It was like, where is Nato Crawford? Because he was there. He made the pass, got himself there in the third, I think.
Yeah,
it
he
was.
Got past Todd.
Correct.
He got past Dean. Yep. He got past Gibbsy.
He got past
everybody.
Exactly.
And then all of a sudden, I'm doing the read at the flag, and I'm like, Nato Crawford. And then someone next to me in the tower in timing was like, no, Crawford. And then he was like 7th or 8th.
Yeah, so I spoke to someone who said that the bike stalled right next to the
pit. Did you hear
area.
The bike in the pits?
No, I didn't. I didn't
so
hear it.
When we were in the pits after the race, you know, chasing everybody around, they started the bike up and they went, and it like had this gnarly flat
right.
spot. I didn't get a chance to interview Nato. He looked pretty pissed, to be honest, so I just kind of left it be. But yeah, apparently he was pretty vocal that the bike had some sort of issue.
I could imagine. They said what I heard with the stalling or the bike stopping is that he was actually pushing it back into the mechanics area, still pressing the button, and finally it went again. So he jumped back on and finished
so
off the
So that
race.
Explains why he lost all those places, right?
Correct, yeah. So, as again, we miss a lot on TV. We're focused on only a couple of battles at a time, so we don't get to see anything. We try and pick it all up, but... we were just as confused when we come around and Nathan Crawford wasn't there in third place.
It was a quiet round for Crawford, though. Like, he I think that third in Moto 2 would have changed the whole perspective on saying, oh, it wasn't the best day. It was interesting. I listened to some interviews with him the other day, and he was basically saying Horsham was great, but with how deep the field is, you can't expect that every weekend. You got to be okay with that, which I thought was an interesting thing to hear from him.
Yeah,
because he's the young up-and-coming graduate, and he should have that gusto and sprint speed to do it, which he did at Horsham. We didn't see that today. He didn't have that elite sprint speed to win the races, but he would have got a podium in that second moto. Probably would have been close to the podium overall, and we'd have said it was a great day. So mechanicals can do that. Luke Clout, 7th overall. Another day of look good, but it just didn't happen for him.
So this one's hard for me to comment on because we didn't see him on screen a lot. There was some times where we did get to see him in that second moto where he was battling it out with, where was he sitting with? I think it was around Ferris area.
Yeah, Ferris, Water. Like he was battling everybody all day. He didn't really get any clear real estate until the second half of that second moto. And the thing with Clout is whether he's going really fast or whether he's struggling, he looks the same. So you can't look at, he's always aggressive. He's always over the front of the bike. He's always scrubbing. So you can't say, oh, he's not attacking the track or, you know, and we obviously work with the Empire team. You know, we create content and do PR and things through the agency. And in the interview, he basically said, he feels great during the week. He feels great on the bike, off the bike, just not coming together on the race weekends right now for him.
Yeah, I'm not sure where to go with that one because we saw such speed out of him at Horsham. I know that's much more his style of riding with the hard pack track. I understand that. But it's those kind of results, although it ended up being an issue at Horsham and he didn't finish in that, but the speed was shown and I feel that the riders should at least take away some confidence and some belief out of the ride that they had before the issue that should continue on to the next kind of rides.
Well, we spoke about this at dinner and we both agreed if Cloudy doesn't crash with two laps to go at Horsham and wins Moto1,
it
transforms the whole rest of the season.
Yeah.
Because then he gets a win at Moto1 round two and then all of a sudden Championship Cloudy's in his head going, I'm the guy again.
Yes. Yeah, it's a tough one. I think we'll see that out of Cloudy once he gets that good result that he knows and we know that he should be able to get. We did see him on TV. It just made me remember. We did see him on TV and he was holding pretty strong there. I think it was in front of Crawford, maybe Waters there at one point. I do get mixed up with the riders at this point in the night with my brain. But then he had a small mistake where I think he tucked the front a little bit or just got a bit cross-rider coming out of a turn.
Yeah, Moto2 was going better. He was fourth.
Yeah.
And then he went back to where he finished, which was seventh.
So, yeah, that's where he looked like he was back to his sort of old normal riding self. And then,
but that just took the wind out of the sails. And then he was just like, I'm not going to catch anyone. And, you know, Metcalf was in eighth overall and he was... Cloudy was six. I'm looking at the overall points. Cloudy was six in Moto2. Medi was seven.
Yep.
Medi was trying to catch Cloudy and Cloudy was just marking him. And Medi was like, I really wanted to get him just to have, you know, I think Medi's aware this is his last year and he just doesn't have it anymore to be running up front. Like he always seemed to pull it out of the bag the last few years at Gilman. But he didn't get the start. He didn't get the track position. It just wasn't happening. But he seemed happy, and it was his 40th birthday tomorrow, so they had a cake at the track. It was really cool.
Yeah, look, Medi's an absolute legend, like any way you look at it. And
that's what he can say, really.
Yeah. He's in that same boat, isn't he? He doesn't want to take those risks anymore. He just wants to go out and enjoy his time, and so he should be able to. He's done a massive career, and being able to just get out there and enjoy riding around and racing with all the crew and still, look, he's still performing pretty damn good.
Oh, you look at where he's at. I mean, he's a privateer. He's got some Team Green support, but, you know, he's got a stock pipe on that bike. Like, he's a privateer. And I was talking to his dad this morning. I always talk to his dad. He's a legend too. And we were on the start and I was like, you good, man? He's like, you know, he's got that kind of half Aussie, half American accent like Brett does, and he's like, oh, I'm just nervous, man. I'm like, you still get nervous after all these years? He's like, 24 years doesn't make a difference. He's like, I don't get as nervous as Supercross. I get really nervous, but he's like, I just want him to be in one pit, like, you know,
Yeah.
So they're aware that, you know, this is the end of the career. It's the last year round. But, again, fan favourite. It's great to see Medi. We'll just run through the overall to finish up. Dylan Wood had a solid ninth overall. Joel Evans had 10th overall. Joel Evans was dead last in both motos. Moto 1, he crashed, tipped the bike over. I think a bunch of oil leaked into the motor. And then it was a smoke machine. Did you see that on TV?
I didn't see the smoke machine.
So much smoke. I've never seen a bike smoke so much and not blow up. And then Moto 2, he crashed on the start straight.
We saw that.
And he came back to like 10th and 12th, yes, respectively.
Yeah.
Really good day for him. And he was bummed in the pits. He's like, I rode the best I've ridden all year. And on paper, it looks like shit.
But yeah.
That was solid for him. Zach Watson had a good day, I thought, as well. 11th overall. Levi Rogers was going really well. So he had a mechanical in Moto 2. All right, let's move on. AMX Superstore's Pro MX review show. We'll go to probably MX2. Round points. There's really not much to discuss without Frum because it's just the Brody Connolly show. And yeah, it's getting to the point where no one's going to stop him now.
Look, he believes. He believes that's where he needs to be. And when he lines up from the interviews that we did on TV, they were short, sweet, straight to the point. You could see it in his face. He knew where he needs to be, and he puts himself straight there. He doesn't believe anyone should be in front of him, and that's why I feel we're seeing out the front. He has a good, solid year from last year as well under his belt coming into this, and honestly, he should be that guy that's out the front, and everyone should be chasing him. But for the gap that he had today and the way he just completely dominated, I think that was a little bit of a surprise to me. There were some riders that certainly rode good, but they've got some work. Certainly got some work to catch up to him.
Yeah, I thought, Larwood had a little bit for him in the beginning of Moto 1, and that's his hometown race, and, you know, great to see him back from injury. We'll touch on that. But, you know, Ferguson is the guy I think has the speed to run with him, but Ferguson's not getting the starts. He's not executing. It's still rough around the edges, and Connolly's just dialed. Like, it really hit home for me in Moto 2. Halfway through the Moto, he's 15 seconds out in front. And then there's the finish double under the tower. And then there's that little roller into the turn. And he was wheeling up onto the roller because there was like the hump of the braking ruts. And then he was jumping off the top of the roller into the turn. Like not over a bump, like probably 20 feet into the turn, landing in the braking hole for the entry to that rut. And then just sitting down and brah, the other side. And I just said on the mic, I was like gobsmacked. I was like, basically like, yeah, fucked. I'm like, did you see that? Like, it was incredible. And he does that everywhere. He's such good bike control. Like after the start straight, you go past the mechanics and there's the switchbacks. Then there's that sort of row of, they're either rollers or doubles, depending on if you can get over them. None of the 450 guys were doubling those in the second motor. Connolly was doubling that first one pretty much every lap.
Yeah, methodical with the way he rides. It's impressive to watch. It's very, very smooth, his riding style. There's not one point where you looked at him and gone, oh, he's on the edge or he's going to make a mistake. Everything he did was so calculated, and I think that's what we got from pushing so hard last year, trying to keep up with Wilson Todd, Nathan Crawford. He was certainly quick last year, but it's just another level for him at the moment. And again, it comes back to that belief that, you know, he was that next guy last year, so he should be the guy this year, and I think that's what we're seeing.
Who did he come up with in New Zealand? Who did he train with? Like, was it Townley, Coppins? Like, because he reminds me of Townley the way he rides.
Yeah,
I don't know if he got coached by Townley. I don't know. I'm a big Ben Townley fan. Watching Levi ride today is just like watching a mini version of Ben. It's incredible. But yeah, it seems like all these New Zealand guys just have this super dialed technique. Maybe it's the natural terrain tracks. You've got Coppins and Townley that kind of head up the training over there. I know Reese Carter does stuff over there too. But all of those riders are very technically sound and maybe a little old school too. Like Connolly's got that new school scrub and intensity, but elbows are on point, toes are on point, very just solid.
I think that country's small enough that they've all got an influence off each other. They've always raced or ridden around each other, that it's all rubbed off on every one of the riders. And anytime you experience a New Zealand rider that comes over here, even back with my era, you would find riders that were so smooth. Your Darryl Hurleys, they were so methodical with what they did. you know, Burkhart's the King Boys, Cody Cooper. Cooper was a little bit looser, but they still had that very similar riding style. And it could be, like you said, an evolution of the tracks that they ride. They do have some pretty unique and cool motocross tracks over there, and that could be a style that gets developed from riding all those.
Yeah, I don't think the aggression is something you can't ride that natural terrain style. You know, you look at all the Woodville and all the tracks over there, it's different. But man, Connolly, what more can you say? He's on a run and it's his year. Mania talked to him on the line before Moto One, doing the hype interviews. He said the injury's starting to come good. I'm assuming he's speaking about his humerus and his shoulder. I don't think people appreciate, I forget too, it's just because he brought that up. You know, in October or early November, he had his humerus out his arm, skin, basically, and had it completely put back together with plates. So maybe I've been a bit harsh on Mania to start the year. I'm like, oh man, like, second year in a row now in MX2 where he should be winning and he's not, and he was this MX3 prodigy, but the injury maybe was more serious than we thought.
It was. We, myself and Hoax, actually saw the crash, and I remember turning to Hoax and go, he's armed backwards. It was pointing the wrong way. It was a bad, bad break. So it's a tough one to come back from mentally as well. It's a nasty break. It's a nasty injury. And mentally, you know what it's like when you have a big injury. It's not easy just to forget and then just go straight back out there. Again, you're not purposely thinking about it, but it's there. It's in the back of your mind.
Subconsciously, it's there.
It's there. So you just need to believe in and build up that confidence and that race fitness as well, which, you know, we saw him at the first round. He was decent speed. We expected a lot out of him. It's a sand track. It didn't quite pan out the way it was meant to be. But he's just getting back into that groove. And I think finally today we're starting to see exactly where he should be at the moment. I think it's only going to grow more and more from here. So it was good to see that he got a good result today. And I think moving forwards that he'll still be up there contending for that podiums all the rest of this year.
Yeah, I think it was a big step today. It was definitely a big step. Now, Noah Ferguson, he ended up third overall. Trying to remember his Moto scores. Moto 1... Oh, can you remember? I'm trying to remember how this played out for him.
It was second or third.
Yeah, it was the Honda.
It was three guys. Hondas.
So he was second in Moto 1.
Yep.
Larwood got third.
Correct.
So that was a good ride. Moto 2, bad start.
Not bad start. He was lane in the first turn.
That's right. Sorry, it was first
lane
turn crash.
In the first turn. He was the second last person to get up. And those riders were through the second turn before he got going again. So he was clear at the very back of the pack. To come through as far as he did, that was such a huge performance. But this is what we keep seeing out of Ferguson. We saw him up there at the first round, but he just keeps getting bad starts or getting into
one
position.
One moto solid, the second moto, like every time there's something to build off. And I got him on the post-race interview in the pits, and man, he was like, his words were like, it was terrible. He's like, today was absolutely terrible, and he had third overall. And I was like, oh, okay. And I did say to him in the interview, I was like, look, man, unfortunately, there's always been something each round that's stopping you from every time you get a second and get some momentum. He got a moto win at round one from memory. But Conley's banking wins. He's banking momentum. And Ferguson is, every time he gets it going, he gets taken away.
Yeah, Ferguson's that guy. He's in my mind, he's the next guy that can challenge Connolly. If he can get himself a good start and run up there straight away. In the first race, he was a little slow to get going. He was he got himself a decent start, but it took some laps before he started getting his momentum going. And we know how strong he is at the end of the motos all the time. And I think it was a little bit slow getting going, where Connolly was straight out the gate. He was ready to go. And that was the difference between them in the first race. So I think it was four laps in a row, and I caught it on the TV. I was watching his times, and every lap, for four or five laps, he bettered his time by half a second or a second. He started to find that groove, but that was probably 5-8 minutes into the race when everyone else was already gone. So by the time he got going, it was too late. Connolly was gone.
Yeah, Connolly was gone. Larwood had pretty good track position.
Yes.
Yeah, and he also had to come through past a couple guys to get third, right? So It's going to be interesting to see where it goes. I mean, I said to him today, you know, look, Queensland rounds will be good for him at the end of the season. He's comfortable there. Interesting little segue. So the graduating class in 2018 junior nationals was Ferguson, Liam Andrews, goodness, I don't know why I'm drawing a blank, Western Australia, Regan Duffy, and Ty Jones. You know, no one could touch Duffy, but I think Ferguson actually won the 125 title because Duffy scrubbed too hard and went over the bars. He caught a foot peg. Ferguson was the only guy all week long that would hole shot every moto. Duffy would blow by him. He would just have the balls to go with him. And he actually forced some mistakes. And he may have got... No, I think Mason's... Anyway, I forget now. We're going back a few years. I was commentating at Tasmania. But point being, you know, unfortunately, Duffy's career's kind of hit a impromptu halt right now. Looks like he's riding again, which is awesome on Instagram, but he's not racing, obviously. You know, Ty Jones doesn't really race at a national level anymore. Liam Andrews has had some injuries. Like, it's crazy to me to think that the talent of that group and Noah's the only one still going. It just shows how, like, brutal the sport is, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, brutal, cruel is both good words for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. Just thinking out loud with that one. But, right, Ferguson third. Kingsford fourth. I don't know. Good round, but... something to build off. I guess we're all expecting more from how much speed he has.
Yeah, I do.
Is that fair to say though, or not really?
No, I think it's not unfair to say we expect more. I think we've seen the speed out of him, and I think he can actually be a consistent top three runner. He just needs that one race where it clicks, and then I think all of a sudden he's a guy that's always there. So. He's certainly shown a lot of speed in some circumstances over these rounds. And I don't think it's going to take much to get that one. And then when he does, people are going, oh, where did he come from? You know, he was back here before, but now all of a sudden he's up there all the time. I don't think it's going to take much. I do expect more out of him. He had a decent day, but yeah, I still think there's more in the tank with him.
Yeah, agreed. You know, Larwood back from injury, spoke with Ross, beaten. I said, I'm surprised he's back. What's the go? I heard spiral fracture. That's usually a big deal. He said, no, spiral fracture of the tib, not the fib.
Okay.
So that changes everything. He got the tib non-weight bearing plated. So pretty much within a few weeks, he was good to weight bear and good to go. So
fib.
The little bone.
The little
whatever
bone.
The little one is.
Pretty sure it's fib.
I always get them confused.
Yep. Non-weight bearing. Yeah. So if you can get that plated and everything, then...
So that's why he was back so soon. And yep. And he looked good, man. Like the endurance wasn't there, but we've seen him at Gilman. He knows the track. He's fast. He ran with Wilson Todd there a couple of years ago. So the speed didn't surprise me. But at the start of the day, I said, what's your goals for the day? He said, I just want to finish two motos. And he did that. Second one was a little crazy, but he still finished. And it's a start. Cosford... six overall. Not surprised me he got six overall, but Cosford, I felt, was here, there, and everywhere all day. Every time I looked at a battle, whether it was for fifth or whether it was for 15th, he seemed to be in that battle. And there was a point where the Yamalube Yamaha, with three of them in Moto2, because Byron was running up front, he was in third. And I think third, fourth, and fifth at one point in Moto2 was Byron, Kingsford, Cosford. Sounds like a law firm. Yeah.
I think we're in a point of this field where there's a bunch of riders that, and like we just mentioned with Kingsford, if they can find whatever it is that clicks with any of these riders, then they are going to be consistent up there. It's kind of weird to see them as far back in the field as we do see them. I think there's about five riders in this little list that you're about to run through that all of them we've seen great results out of before. For whatever reason it is that they're not showing their true form right now. And I'm not saying that they're riding bad. They're all riding good. They're all doing what they do. But I think there's something more in them. I really think that they can click, and then we'll see them up there all the time.
The click is that breakout ride where, right. You know, like I said, you know, Cosford's battling for fifth, he's battling for 12th. Like, there's no clear air, there's no clear track, there's no vision. You're constantly reacting to what everyone's doing around you to a degree, and it's hard to build on that, but they just need that one start or whatever it is. The next guy we got to talk about, man, Yokoyama. I don't know where that came from today. Haruki was Harukiing.
That should have been a track where Haruki struggled.
I agree.
Before we say the wrong thing here, if you were to look at Haruki Yokoyama on a bike and just take an idea from what you see sitting there in front of you, that track should have been something that threw him around everywhere. Mm-hmm. But he was controlling that bike incredibly today. And the pace he had, he was fastest on track a couple of times, faster than the leader for multiple laps there in that second moto.
That second moto was, I mean, he did the scrub pass that you were talking about. He was, to me, the fastest rider through the double-double section before the start straight. That bike is an absolute rocket ship. I don't quite know how he's not getting starts on it because, you know, I got the rundown on his program today. I didn't realize that I thought he was based in Japan now, flying in for Australia. No, he's based in Australia, still trains with Ross, still lives down there in Gippsland. And now he's basically factory Honda HRC Japan test rider that races. So the word is that he is getting bikes shipped to him every other week. You know, his wife's still his mechanic. He gets all these parts that he tests. No one's allowed to look in the motor. No one's allowed to touch it except his wife. And it all gets sent back to Japan. So the freight bill must be insane. So he flies in and out for the Japan Nationals. And he just beat Jay Wilson on a 450 at the last Japanese round.
Absolutely astonishes me that he can ride a 450 as fast as that.
But man, watching him today, you go, like, if you could do that every round and run up front, like, he could do it. Yeah. He's so talented.
Yeah, it was impressive to watch the way he muscled, the way he found some different lines and muscled his way through some of these riders today. It was absolutely impressive. Probably the highlight of my day watching motocross today was watching Haruki get through and make the passes that he did and run the speed that he did.
He nearly got to third. He got fourth in Moto2, didn't he? Yes. He almost made the pass for third, but so impressive. Like, it's just fun to watch him when he's riding like that. Byron Dennis, weird deal. Dennis got to second in Moto2. I couldn't quite tell. I know he crashed. He got stuck under the bike. And I saw him kick the seat. Like, to, you know, when you're stuck, you kick the bike to get it off you. And then it just wouldn't fire.
Yeah, so we saw it a couple of times today. Actually, go back to Moto1. He was also running decently, but then stalled it in turn number one. Very momentarily, but it dropped him off the back of the little pack that he was
in, yeah,
racing against. Sorry. And then, yes, second moto up into second place. And to be quite honest, that's where I expect Byron Dennis to be after what we saw early in the year. I think we saw some speed out of him at the first round, then had a bad race after that. I expect him to be running up there, and we haven't seen it in the other races. So,
well, he's a rookie.
I don't care if he's a rookie. He's come off MX3. I don't care. Yeah. He's a big boy, and he's got some great speed. Yeah. He is strong on the bike. He has proved that he can run up there. So I expect that he should be running up there. And that second race is evidence of that.
I agree. He should.
Yeah.
I think the rookie comment was that he's making rookie mistakes. You know?
Yeah, I agree. I agree. That can be a thing. But I feel he's, from what I saw last year especially, he is grown enough on the bike to be able to work out these little issues that happen. So the second race, it was just a simple, maybe he tipped in a little bit too hard, maybe he lost the front just a little bit, and his foot was stuck under the bike, and then the hot bike, it just didn't want to start straight away. That's all it was.
Yeah, okay.
And second was his.
Different day altogether. Seemed like, again, you don't associate Gilman with being deep sand and having mechanicals, but seemed like a lot of bikes getting hot, a lot of bikes weren't starting, a lot of smoke, a lot of weird things, like Levi Townley gets a rock in his front sprocket in that 85.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, it didn't seize. We all thought it seized. I'm sure you guys did too, because it was locked solid.
Yep.
And then Ben put on Instagram, Ben Townley that is, that there was a pebble rock in the front sprocket and it just jammed it up.
Yeah, right. Well, we'll get to that soon.
Dennis, eighth. Caleb Byram, really solid second moto, great start. Yep. For KJ to do that in the sand and he's more of a hard pack guy. Like, if he gets starts in the hard pack, he ran up front at Horsham in the second moto. He can do it. Talks him in the pits after. I'm conscious we don't want to run too long, so I'll keep it brief. But yeah, he knows he can do it, and he's going to do it. He said he just has to keep getting the starts and putting himself in good positions. So, Reid Taylor, 10th overall, massive improvement in Moto One, sixth place. Apparently, they changed just about everything they did on what they could on the bike, they said, in between rounds, and it showed. He was back to fourth in qualifying, sixth in Moto One, building. I don't know what happened in Moto Two.
I think he got caught up possibly in early race crash.
Yeah, because he was riding around in 17th. And he got 6th overall, I believe. He got 10th overall. I'm getting tired. I'm making no sense. But it was better for Taylor. Unfortunately, it didn't work out. But I think we'll round that there for MX2. There was some weird results. Reese Budd did not have a good day at all. Crashed in the second moto, getting caught up with the other rider. Just things that the bad starts. Bailey Malkowitz, after Horsham, I thought Malko was back. He was riding around in 15th, 20th all day. It was a very strange deal.
Second race, he got up to 9th.
Did he get in the top 10?
Yeah, he got inside top 10. So
okay, that's a step.
Yeah, it's a step.
But I guess maybe we all got a bit excited. I did. You know, Malkowitz was back after Horsham in that Moto 1, but maybe him being that big on that privateer bike in the sand just kind of highlighted he needs to be on a 450 maybe. I don't know. Right, that'll be it for probably MX2. And we'll have a quick little recap of MX3, Hammy, and we'll wrap this one up. So MX Superstore's Pro MX review show here on the Inside Dirt Network. MX3, Jake Cannon is back in form. He's back in fitness. We talked about it after round one and round two. You know, he had the massive crash that you would have seen at Supercross. We were all there working. You know, almost loses his spleen, internal bleeding, the whole nine. Everyone's focused purely on saving the kid's organs. They don't see he's got a broken scaphoid. He has to go back in for surgery months later, gets it pinned, I think. And basically rode the week of round one was the first time he got on a bike since Newcastle Supercross. So he's been riding his way back into shape.
And doing a damn good job of it too.
Yeah.
Look, we saw him at round two where he had those... he was running up front there, and we called it on the broadcast, can he hold out for the race? And ultimately, he couldn't. And you know what? That is to be expected. With what he is coming back from, the amount of time he spent on the bike, I think it was a massive surprise that he was even up there in those positions in the first place. So he was certainly exceeding what everyone is expecting at that point. We questioned it a little bit today. We said, you know, he's had some time to gain more fitness, more time on the bike. Is it enough? Well, yes, it is. He has proved that today. He certainly has shown that he is a force to be reckoned with going forward in the rest of this championship. He sits, I think it's like 30 points back or something like that. But if he can continue to have these kind of rides where he picks up a double win race of the day, then certainly he's going to close that points gap down, especially with how all over the place these places have been with all of these riders.
Yeah, if he could start winning out, like it's only round three, there's what? 5 rounds to go, so that's 10 motos. If he can start picking up 5 to 10 per round, he can still win.
Oh, and easily.
Can he do that? Until today, I would have said maybe not. But man, the speed he showed today, and you know, everyone knows how good he is, so it's starting to come back. But not more than can be said. Kay Kingsford, really. I keep talking about this when I commentate. You got, you know, Jake Cannon, younger brother to Charlie Cannon in the family. You've got Kay Kingsford, younger brother to Ryder Kingsford. It's just a generational sport, man. Kay rode really good, had great speed. Wasn't going to beat Jake today, but the best of the rest.
Yeah, look, he was very fast. He had some crash issues or off the track today. That's what brought him unstuck, unfortunately for him. If he would manage the first race, if he stayed upright, the race win was his, no doubt. But he certainly got the speed there. Maybe towards the end or the back end of the motos, we started seeing, I'm not going to say he was tiring much, but maybe the strength wasn't quite there on a track like today to be as solid on the bike. But certainly a rider that will be able to get up there and contend for these wins overall, the speed is 100% there.
Kobe Drew third. Again, I feel like the whole WBR, Bulk Nutrients, Yamaha team, it just, they all look the same, except for the red plate that was on Hannes's bike that isn't on Hannes's bike anymore. I think, it does Drew have the red plate now? I think he does.
Yeah, I'm not sure where it's bounced to. I think it might have done that, but they all had a bad Moto 1.
They all had a bad Moto 1.
And that's because of crashes off the start, first lap crashes.
Yeah, they all got caught up in different things.
Yeah.
But basically, Kobe Drew, so you got, you know, Kingsford on that team second. Kobe Drew ends up third overall. I think he gets the red plate. Deacon Pace.
Pretty impressed.
Man, the kid is... I know a lot about his program. You know, we work with the Moto One team. We know with the services, Lighting Media Group, with PR and content and such. And he's the real deal. I don't think his program, and I'm not talking about the team or the bikes, like Josh Robinson builds him a killer motor, like the thing he hole shots just about every race we've had in MX3. Like, the kid can get starts, the bike's legit, everything's good. When I say his program, he's over from WA, he's moved to the sunny coast, he's figuring it out, he's got his gym program he's working on, he's, who is he riding with, who's he training with, like, it's not like he's at home riding every week like he always has. He's still trying to, like, piece this all together, and I think his fitness isn't quite there. Technique isn't quite there. He's a little rough around the edges, but man, the kid's like, he's just got balls. I don't know what else you can say. Like, someone passes him, he'll shut him straight back down. He just races forward.
He didn't feel the pressure today. He had a lot of pressure applied to him. Very impressed with the rider himself. Like you said, I think he's figuring it out. I think it's just the more time that he spends over on the Eastern Coast learning this, the more hard pack style riding, I think he is, he's just going to keep improving, and he is really impressing me with what he's been doing so far. And this weekend was another example of him growing as a rider, for sure.
Yeah, and I think you go, okay, three rounds in now, it's like, okay, well, he's had the sand round, well, they are with sand, he's known to be good in the sand. Then he wins at Horsham in Moto 2, second overall. Oh, okay, well, now he's done it. Okay, three rounds in, he's going to be one of the guys. Hannes surprised me today. I don't know what I was expecting after he had the red plate, but it wasn't that. It was just a strange day for him.
If he came through the field better in Moto 1, we'd probably have a different storyline to talk about right now. He seemed, whether it was the bike, I did go to the pits after the first races, and there was a lot of work going on across all the bikes. So I don't know the extent of the damage that those riders sustained in Moto 1.
He didn't look like he was riding like normal, so there may have been something going on. Hey?
Correct. He didn't come through the field like I thought he would. It was very slow progress. So they said he was fine at the time. You know, maybe he was feeling it a little bit from the crash. I don't know. Maybe the bike was bent up. I don't know. But certainly he needed to come through the field a bit quicker than he did. He's a caliber rider that should be able to come through the field pretty quick. With the races that we've seen so far this year, he just didn't execute that in the first race. That's why he loses the red plate. But I wouldn't count that one out just yet. He certainly has shown enough speed, enough talent and drive. But again, going back to what I said before, across this entire field until today in this class, no one has had a consistent result.
No. I think if you can, I can't remember who I was speaking with that's done the math. I actually think it was Josh Robinson, which is Deacon's mechanic. I think he's done the math where he's like, if you just finish sixth every moto in MX3, you pretty much, I think, either podium or win the championship. He's done the average on points for the last few years because it's so unpredictable with the point swings. He's like, basically, yeah, be a top five guy every single moto. Don't have DNFs. Don't have what Jake Cannon had to start the year where you miss a moto, whatever. It's got merit to it. So Jackson Fuller, fifth overall, great ride for him. Kobe Hannes.
Let's talk about that, because Fuller, that's their first year of juniors, and that was an exceptional ride. And he put himself into that position. He didn't just get gifted that one.
He rode into it. And he's been really doing well at the Sunny States. He's obviously from Queensland, and he's been winning at the Sunny States. Like, the kid's the real deal. And today he really proved that.
Absolutely needs some props. Absolutely fantastic ride.
Hannes, we talked about him sixth overall. Seth Shackleton, your teammate.
Yeah, look, he had a solid first race. I don't know what happened in the second one. He was up there, but you know, if he can work it out in his head as well, he certainly can be a rider that gets up there and contests, but he's got a bit of work ahead of him.
8th overall, Sonny Pellicano. I don't know a thing about him, do you?
Only what Lee said today. Another young rider that's having a bit of a breakout ride today.
Yeah.
He stood out. Again, another rider that wasn't gifted that position. He worked his way into it, and I think that's another rider that really needs some props because that was a fantastic effort to get up there.
Yeah, and I don't mean that. Like, I was saying his name in qualifying. I'm like, I don't know who this kid is. I don't know anything about him, and that's rare. Like, normally we know who's who in the zoo, so to speak. But good on him, man. I need to go talk to him in the pits next round and find out some stuff about him. Travis Lindsay, 9. Birchall, quiet over Birchall in 10. Lindsay, you know, those guys, Lindsay's a top 10 guy. I think Birchall should be higher up than that. But again, one of the WBR riders, it's just a weird day.
Yeah, it is another rider. He certainly should be up a bit higher, but expect to see him up there in the coming rounds, I think.
All right, Hammy. Well, this has been the AMX Superstores Primex Review Show on the Inside Air Network. It's 9 o'clock Adelaide time, which I don't even know. I think we're, 30 minutes behind?
Yep.
It's late. We've been up since 5 a.m. Appreciate you doing this. We should try and do more this season on the Sunday night rounds if we can.
Yeah, sounds good, man. I've got a 4:30 call to get up for the airport in the morning, so.
Yeah, I do not. I booked an 11:45 home because I was just like, the horror I went through getting home from Horsham on Sunday night, I was like, I'm never doing that again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Horrible. But look, it was some great racing today, no doubt. That's kind of the end of the really soft tracks, though, right, for the rest of the season.
There's no more loam now.
Working into some horrible hard pack, ruddy tracks, muddy conditions. So, we may see some new faces, new names that are running up front over the next couple of rounds.
It's going to be interesting. All right, guys, thanks to AMX Superstores. Thank you, Danny Ham. And we will see you, I think, 3-4 weeks from Maitland. So thanks for listening. And support those that support the podcast. And with that being said, we will see you guys at Maitland.